Hello and welcome to this Cloud of Data podcast with your host, Paul Miller. I have been following the emerging data market space for a number of years, trying to understand the ways in which some of the companies who are beginning to appear there relate to one another and how they offer a value proposition to customers. During this series of podcasts, I'm going to be talking to stakeholders from a number of the leading players in the data market space: Microsoft, Factual, Kasabi, InfoChimps, and a number of others. Each of these podcasts will be made available on the Cloud of Data website, as well as through iTunes and perhaps a number of other syndication routes. Please feel free to check back from time to time as new episodes become available. And now, let's get on with the podcast. The first in this series is with someone I've known for a very long time, Tyler Bell, who's now Director of Product at Factual. Here we go. Tyler, thank you very much for joining me for this podcast today. Before we get into some of the detail around Factual and your perspectives on data markets, can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself and your own background, please?
Sure. Good morning, Paul. So I have a dark previous career as an archaeologist. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with your own tendencies in that direction.
I tend to keep it quiet.
I spun a company out of Oxford University that did some geo-related things. Briefly, I was a director of product at Yahoo Geotechnologies Group, where we looked after a lot of the geotaxonomies. We looked after a lot of the user location technologies and mapping, of course. Recently, I moved to Factual, where I'm director of product.
Okay, good stuff. So Factual, what's the elevator pitch?
Factual develops technologies that aggregate data at very large scales. So the problem that we're trying to solve really is that there's a gold mine of information on the internet. The problem is that it's highly distributed and dispersed, extremely fragmentary, it's heterogeneous and heavily duplicated. So we develop technologies that take that information, distill it, and consolidate it into highly usable and normalized data sets. So the metaphor that I tend to use is a crucible, where content with impurities is put in, all the impurities are baked off, and you're left with a fine nugget of valuable metal left behind.
And the common denominator in all of this is location, is it?
Indeed. So Factual started out as a place where anyone could upload any kind of data, make it immediately accessible via an API. Increasingly over the past year, we've really focused our energies around data aggregation curation. Factual doesn't necessarily want to be a location-only company. Really what we're doing is we're cutting our teeth on location now, on places around the world, because it's just a wonderful way to learn how to refine your business, and of course how to refine your technology stack, because you're dealing with so many geographies and so many different languages. But for the immediate future, you'll see us focus primarily on places. We've got some information on doctors and healthcare providers coming out, and you'll see some other initiatives shortly as well that relate that are contiguous with places, but pretty much relate to the mobile experience nonetheless.
Okay, and where does the money come from?
The business model, such as it is twofold. The first is that we license our data in a traditional model. So large-scale players will come to us when they're looking for a place database. We will provide them with CSV downloads, which we keep updated through an API. And of course, we also have API access where anyone can log in, sign up as a developer and use Factual global data for $100 a month. So that's number one. Number two is something that we're working on right now where it gets particularly interesting. Because we have so much information, because we know where a place is, because we know what it's called, we can basically analyze the geographic profile of regions and of companies, understand their electronic footprint. And it gets interesting when we can start working with this derivative data and distributing that back out as a derived data product. So that kind of thing is particularly interesting, and you'll be seeing more from Factual in the coming year on that.
Okay, and you've got VC funding as well.
That's right. So most recently, $25 million investment, not this past December, but two Decembers ago, so just over a year ago, from led by Andreessen Horowitz and Index Ventures.
Okay. And what was the interest for them? I mean, $25 million for place-based data. Isn't Google Maps all we need?
Well, remember, it's not just place data, of course, as we're actually developing an infrastructure, machinery, and business model for, I mean, if you want to think of it as gold mining, which is a slightly crass and in part inappropriate metaphor, so let's call it something like tin mining, which is still extremely valuable, but less sort of precious. So the idea here, of course, is that we're learning how data exists across the web. We're learning the best technologies and approaches that we can use to aggregate it and pull it together. We're learning how to work with partners who contribute data back to us. So a great deal of the information that we have within our data sets is partner contributed. We're learning how to work with open caches of the web and extract information from those and bring it together. So of course, once we prove our mettle in places, there's no domain that cannot benefit from the approach that Factual is taking. Now, obviously, we need to focus and choose our directions carefully. But earlier, I guess it was earlier in the month, you sent out a tweet regarding data markets, and I think it's something we're going to talk about later on this podcast. But the whole idea behind data markets is data in, it's curated, and then it's redistributed. At Factual, we believe very, very strongly that the benefits that we bring to the game and generally the things that people want are domain expertise around the data, because that affects how it is distributed, affects how it's collected and managed. So we don't want to spread ourselves too thin across all kinds of data immediately. We really want to focus vertical by vertical.
So in terms of domain expertise, are you employing those domain experts or partnering with them?
A little bit of both. So what I mean by that is that, there's a good knowledge of how geo works across Factual. I come from the geo and local background, of course. But what gets interesting, of course, is one of the models that we work on within Factuals. I mean, first of all of our data within the systems is unencumbered. So there are no restrictions on how it can be used that are enforced imposed by a third party. One of the nice things that we'll do is that we will find someone who, say, is an expert in restaurants or is an expert in parking, and they're experts in their particular slice of local. They will come to us and they'll say, I'm moving into Canada, I'm moving into Europe, I'm looking for all the base data you have. And in return, I will give you my base data. And what I mean by base data here is that Factual distinguishes between core data within the local space is basically equivalent to the H card, which is name, address, phone number, longitude, latitude, category, etc. We distinguish between that, which is sort of that's the foundation that upon which location-based services will build their business. Many businesses that are relatively forward-thinking, I have identified that having this base data is important, but it's not what makes or breaks the company. What makes or breaks the company, of course, is how the application layer on top of that base data or what ancillary data is created and curated by that application and its communities. So essentially you have this sort of two tiers of data. One is base and the other is proprietary, which is specific to your application or your market. And Factual really wants to deal only in the core data. So partners will very openly give us their core data and say, here is my curated list of this particular type of restaurant in this particular geography, say. And we will very gladly give them corresponding data in a different geography or in a related vertical. And then we shake hands and we walk away. And the nice thing about this is that we now have verified data or expanded data within our resource that has been checked and curated by someone who knows their business and their sector terribly well. And of course, they now have the ability to grow their business in new directions. And we call it an even deal. There's no sort of ongoing continuation of obligations for each other. So this is a nice thing that Factual does. It's data as currency. It allows us to act as custodians for a larger body of core data. And this approach seems to be very well received on the markets and within the sector.
And how do you ensure that that data remains current? I can see the value. You've got a US-based restaurant review company who wants to expand to Europe. You give them the European restaurants, they give you the US ones they already know about. That's a deal done. Once they're in Europe, presumably they're beginning to get knowledge of their own on the ground, so they begin to enrich that data for themselves. How do you ensure that the US data they gave you doesn't get out of date any more than some of the other services?
Yes, the currency of this volatile information is absolutely critical within the sector. You don't want to send users to closed places, and obviously, when new ones open, you want to ensure that they can find them when they're looking for them. So these same partners we'll have a continued and ongoing relationship with, and what that entails really is that we will update them with new data over time, and they will do the same for us. Only a few partners are the ones that walk away completely. Usually it's an ongoing data partnership. And really that's how we refer to members of the Factual community as data partners, because it's very rare that one of our engagements will be a one-way swap. Again, Factual acts as the custodian for data, so we want to ensure that our APIs can both ingest changes and recommendations and corrections from our community and their users, of course, and also distribute those changes and broadcast those changes back to, the partner that created it, but also to the entire Factual community. So that's the intention, really. Is you can think of us sort of as a amplifier of current information, where things are written into Factual, and when you know it's written to Factual and we trust you as a domain expert, we will redistribute and broadcast that information back out.
Okay. So you exchange data at no cost with some of these partners. You sell access to data, as we mentioned briefly at the beginning. You also provide free access to data. Would you buy data?
We will, and we have bought data if there are no encumbrances attached. We will not do the traditional data licensing engagement where we license data for a year, it can only be used under the following terms, and then at the end of the year, the data is cleaned out from the system.
And how important is this lack of encumbrance? I mean, you talked about it in terms of people using your data as well. Is that an absolute requirement, or is it just the way you happen to work at the moment?
Well, it's a requirement now, although, you know, it could be, Paul, that we could change this sometime in the future if it suits our business needs, absolutely. Personally, I subscribe quite vehemently to this ethos, but it's not to say that my personal beliefs about open and accessible and unencumbered data will necessarily get in the way of Factual creating a good business. So generally, it's something that we're very wary of, from a purely sort of tactical standpoint, because this is probably the real kicker, is because usually those encumbrances must be passed on to your users. So you mentioned Google Maps at the beginning of our discussion today. I mean, Google Maps aggregates a lot of licensed proprietary information from a large number of third parties. They do very well with it. Excellent. But of course, the obligations that they must place their users under must be, because this is aggregated data, they must subscribe to the most I guess, the most restrictive of all their partners, because they won't necessarily differentiate. Google and similar companies will not create TOS depending on which data set you're accessing. So it's always going to be one TOS, and that terms of service for the user is always going to be to reflect the most restrictive terms of their most restrictive partner. So what this means is really you've got all kinds of rules about whether you can cache, whether you can store data, what happens to the data afterwards. And really, the follow-on effect is twofold. One is that it becomes just a little bit more, or I'd say a lot more difficult to do what you want in the LBS space. There's a lot of new businesses that are happening here. And if your terms of service are so restrictive that you're only allowed to do one thing, it's very hard to innovate. And, you know, that's really what we're perhaps one of the things we're most proud of at Factual is because we follow this unencumbered philosophy. We allow our developers to do pretty much anything they like within certain restrictions, of course. But we're very, very flexible in terms of the end use. And being flexible allows our data partners to explore all kinds of new uses of the data that we haven't thought of. But I'd say also that our doing so makes us easier to do business with. I mean, there's a lot of organizations that have worked with some of the traditional players, many of those are, you know, highly, highly restrictive contracts that take weeks and weeks to turn around. My goal and the goal of my colleagues at Factual is to make us the kind of company that you can come to access data. We turn around an agreement in the shortest possible terms. And we know that the success of your product and the success of your application contributes to the betterment of Factual data, and that's good for us as well.
How does this go over with some of your data partners who, I guess, have come from a tradition where data is quite tightly controlled, is wrapped up in impenetrable licenses, probably quite expensive, probably geographically limited, so you can only use it in the US and not in Canada. How do they deal with a one-size-fits-all open approach?
Generally, it's very well received. You know, I love getting emails and seeing tweets from developers saying, hey, love your product, so easy to use, so easy to engage with. I guess the two extremes outside of the highly contented customer that breathes a sigh of relief, the two extremes are one where someone comes to Factual thinking that we're totally free and easy and we let anything go for you know, tuppence or for free, and we have to say, well, this is a business model, and we actually do ask for recompense on a monthly basis. And some people are shocked by that, or shocked that they can't download 55 million entities and do whatever they want with it. So that's sort of one extreme. We don't see that very often. I guess the other extreme, which we see slightly more, is that we'll engage usually with sort of established companies, and they will have a hard time understanding this whole data for data thing. And their legal teams and their accountants are not really clear how to handle that. And there's no really precedent for the idea of swapping data and shaking hands and saying, okay, those contributions are done. And and those kind of contracts kind of perversely tend to go on at some time, mainly because the people behind them, basically the application implementers, the program developers, they get this and they dig it and they want to work with Factual, and that's fantastic. But when it gets to the attorneys and the finance departments that are used to cutting traditional deals, there's no precedent. And so there's a lot of exploration about how this data thing and these data exchanges can work. But usually we get through those.
I guess there's a perception as well that liability may be an issue. Are you accepting theirs? Are they accepting yours? And all of that when it comes to exchanging data.
Yeah, I mean, liability is the bane of American culture, certainly. You know, the nice thing is that places data doesn't necessarily sort of run any kind of hospital machine. So the risk is relatively minimal, and we always find ways around that.
There's probably a lawyer out there thinking, I wonder how I can make place data run a hospital.
I'm sure there's several.
Yes, I'm sure. So, I mean, we've talked in general terms about the sorts of data you get and the sorts of deals you engage in. Can you give some examples of the sorts of companies people might have heard of who are either giving you data or taking data from you?
Yes. I mean, a lot of our larger engagements are restricted. So what that means is that I can't tell you on a recorded program who our customers are, which is a shame because they're great customers and they're highly recognized names. Generally, the breakdown of our customer profile is that we have a very large number of mobile developers that are developing small mobile apps, LBS applications. We have others that are developing navigation applications, some that are developing YP Yellow Page applications as well. And they run the gauntlet from, you know, billion dollar public companies to startups that are just getting off the ground last month.
And presumably a lot of what they're doing is enriching the data they get from you. There wouldn't be much of a business model in just providing access to the data that people could already get from you.
Yes. So the contributing data back to Factual is not an obligation. We always strongly encourage that. And we encourage that through, I mean, common sense. Obviously, if you make contributions back to Factual, we can incorporate all the changes we get from other partners and normalize them and get them back out. And that's really part of this data flywheel, where basically information comes in, we spin it around, we keep the engine going. A lot of people tend to think of place databases as sort of static entities. We kind of think of it more like a living body where things are ingested, things are expelled, the body grows and improves and gets in better shape. It's a living, ongoing thing that doesn't really have static versions. The way we work with our partners really is, we try to keep that life cycle going, that data ecosystem. And it seems to be an extremely healthy approach so far. Not everybody's bought into it, of course. Some people are making money just fine on the proprietary traditional licensing models, and that's cool with us. It's cool with them. But the young and hip companies, of course, dig that this is the way forward, and we're seeing a really great engagement with the business proposition that we have.
And how do you see the breakdown of access methods? And presumably, people could download data, or they could make API calls into your service. What's the split there?
Yeah, it's hard to do a split by sort of customer count. Wouldn't be fair because we tend to get larger players that take our download option and the smaller players use our API. Although that's not exclusive because our API is extremely powerful. So we do get some very large folks on it. What I do find interesting is that there's a very clear use case for individuals who basically want local search or categorical search will always use our API. But as you see this growing, the advent of recommendation systems and analytical applications that slice and dice data and distribute it and work with it before presenting it to the customer, those data partners will very often take our data downloads because it means they can manipulate them on their side. They can recategorize them. They can shard and index them in ways that we didn't think about or don't meet a general use case. So it's a pretty, the short answer, Paul, is that it's a pretty even divide between downloaded partners and API partners. And it really depends on the kind of business that you are running. The API is great because it's no nonsense and we take care of everything. The downloads are great because you've got the data right there and you can do really anything that you want with it. And we're beginning to see an increase in hybrid users that might take a download and then we'll make calls to our API to resolve entities or to crosswalk them against other references.
And the data that you're providing to people, does that change every day or are there, you know, dates where you push out new updates to the system?
Our goal is to have extremely atomic updates. And we're working in that direction. Right now, it really depends on the number of edits that come in from third parties and that we make through our editorial system. So it's a little bit of a combination of both. Right now, our data changes quite regularly, but to keep things relatively simple, we're pushing that out at at intervals that sort of go by weeks, and in some countries, months right now. We've just introduced a new version of our API and we're including in that in beta format something called diffs, which basically broadcasts out the deltas between different versions of entities. So say I give you a CSV, you can ping our services to find out which entities have changed within a given time frame. So until that comes out of beta, you will not see us do these highly atomic updates, but we'll see where we are by the end of 2012. I mean, the data is indeed highly volatile. It demands atomic frequent updates, and that's really our programmatic goal, is to ensure that we can deliver those as soon as possible.
Okay. And in terms of geographic coverage, you've got something for most countries. Every country?
Not every country. We don't sort of dip into countries where, you know, we might just have a few entities here and there. We make concerted editorial and curatorial efforts to create a usable body of data. And what that means is that we just sort of go one country at a time. Right now we've got 50 countries and we've got about a total of 55 million entities within those 50 countries.
Okay. Now, you mentioned a few times this expectation that sort of permeates the internet, that data, especially basic facts, should be free. You know, people should just be able to come along and help themselves. Clearly, that isn't always the case. How does a company like Factual set about persuading its customers that basic, boring location data has a value and is worth paying for?
Yes. I mean, we do have competitors who offer free access. So last night I got an email saying, you know, how do you compare to this free guy? You know, I have articulated previously in yours and my discussions, but on various blogs and such, that you know, so much of what we see is an increased commoditization of local data, certainly in the U.S. So the short answer really is, A, in other countries, the data is still not commoditized, so it's still hard to get, it's still hard to find in a normalized and inclusive manner. Factual makes efforts to ensure that we don't focus on one specific vertical or just a fragment of a country. So it's easy to get data for one particular region or sort of a specialist in, say, you know, anything from sort of plumbers in Arkansas to pet sanctuaries in Shanghai. But actually combining those things together in an integrated and holistic data set is really where Factual adds its magic. So for a lot of countries in Europe, Asia Pacific, South America, the data is still hard to get. So people come to Factual for that international data, and that's excellent. But more excitingly, and I think sort of what's becoming more of a signature of Factual's approach, is that we're developing platforms that build on top of that data. And what I mean by that is that if we acknowledge that, say, you know, place data in the U.S. is pretty basic, pretty banal stuff, you can still do very interesting things with it on the application layer. So that's why, say, we brought Crosswalk to fruition. Crosswalk allows you to understand and learn how an entity is called in other namespaces. So in human parlance, that means that if I have an entity, a factual entity, I can use Crosswalk to find out where I could find this on YP.com or Foursquare or Yelp or Zagat's. It allows users to address one of the fundamental issues in local search and local data management, which is the same entity exists in so many places all over the web. How can I actually harmonize those and bring those together in a coherent form? And that's interesting. That's valuable. Just the count of crosswalks for any entity is a very, very interesting signal. And the nature of those and where you can find the entity really describes an entity's electronic footprint in the local space. So that's a very interesting actionable intelligence that others don't have. We also have, of course, a platform called Resolve, which allows you to pass attributes to Factual, and we will, wherever possible, unequivocally resolve that those attributes to a factual entity. And this means that you can use it to dedupe your own database or enrich your own database. So it's not all about our entities, although that's a foundational part of our business. It's really what we can do with those and what we can do, what platforms we can develop to help our customers make better use of the data that they have.
So those entities could, at a very simple level, be your local Starbucks, which has one identifier in Foursquare, another identifier in Gowalla, and yet another identifier on Google Local.
Yes.
Good, because that's clearly an issue that people will grapple with. Now, reaching back a bit into your GIS history.
Dark days.
Well, indeed. I remember them well. Can these entities support hierarchy? So, one of the problems you see on things like, say, Gowalla and Foursquare at the moment is that they will have a lot of very flat entities, 27 million coffee shops in an airport at the same level as all the terminals and the airport itself. Can you begin to address some of that and create the groupings and the hierarchies that allow that to make a little more sense?
Yeah, this is a problem that you articulate this issue, which is sort of a bit of a bugbear for any consumer certainly, but it's particularly grating for any application developer within the local space. Because it's really those associations between entities that are particularly exciting, and it actually allows folks to make better sense of the information that they have. So, for example, how stores relate to a particular airport terminal, rather than just sort of clustering them all in a place. All the stores in a mall, for example, are very commonly geocoded to the same address, and so they tend to exist one on top of the other. Of course, Google's indoor mapping initiative is taking advantage of or taking the opportunity to solve this very significant problem, and a lot of other indoor mapping companies are approaching this as well. Generally, that's a problem that we've recognized. We don't see that as our top priority, although it's something we want to help make sense of. You'll see us integrate hierarchies within terms of how businesses relate to their brands or their chains. You'll see us integrate geographic relationships, of course. What we want to avoid doing is becoming a free base where we're all about the semantic relationships between entities and their attributes. We want to have actionable information where entities can easily be related to other entities through well-quantified properties. But we're not going to be there, Paul, until we have complete and utter grasp of how we can manage entity-based data across the internet. And there's still a lot of work to do on the deduping, on the normalization, on the standardization of data in the 50 countries that we have. So the proper elevator answer to your question is that it's a problem that we've recognized. It's something that is on our radar, certainly. Although we've got bigger fish to fry in 2012.
Okay, and as you said, getting the basic data right is perhaps more important than some of these additional features.
Well, and making it more useful, right? It's still, these things are so much more than just databases of entities. How you make those accessible, how you match what data you have against the data that we have, how you can type and how you can quantify the information, how you can derive data about the entities that you have that doesn't exist anywhere else on the internet. Those are the things that we're interested in.
And this requires an awful lot of background work, both computer processing, but also probably quite a lot of manual intervention, which comes back to sort of perceptions of value. I can download a database of Starbucks locations. I can download a database of Pete's coffee shop locations. Surely it's easy to munge the two together would be the light-hearted way of looking at it. But actually, it's a lot harder than that. How do you set about explaining the value and the complexity of munging together two data sets that on the surface look like they should just flow together?
Yeah, it's. There's a few things that you've touched on here. I mean, one is that when you take multiple data sets from disparate sources and combine them, that's very easy to do, of course. The problem, though, is that you always get some kind of overlap. So it's that overlap and deduping, which is a critical aspect of the value that Factual brings to the game. And of course, there's omissions as well. You know, just because this one company has a database of all the stores in a particular brand that they gleaned in 2006, it doesn't necessarily mean it reflects the current state of those chains. So how you keep this current, how you work in authority, how you identify missing entities, how you dedupe, merge, and purge all of these different inputs is a very difficult and very critical problem. But that's where we're making our bread and butter. That's where our expertise lies. For example, we now have about 19.3 million places in our U.S. data set. And all of the references, all the inputs, all of the third-party contributions that we have that make up that data set total about sort of 1.2 billion. So it gives you some idea. It's not just the question of creating an access database and then having good editorial over it. You've got to have very, very smart systems that can work with large volumes of data. And you've got to really know how local is used. And you have to know exactly how your customers, your developers' application, users of your developers' applications, you must know how they access the data. We want developers, when they come to Factual, to say, oh, that's so easy, that's something different, that they have anticipated my need. And it's great. You know, we get emails like that very frequently, and they're passed all around the office. We're very pleased.
Okay. So there's clearly an emphasis here on taking data from third parties, cleaning and aggregating it together to create a single seamless whole. Would you go beyond that to actually start providing the tools to enable people to do things with the data? Would you go beyond it even to offer user-facing services so that I can ask you where my nearest coffee shop is?
Yes. I mean, you know, that's possible in terms of Factual's creating sort of an application that takes advantage of our data in ways that others don't. I'm very reticent to do that, and I think you touch upon an important issue, is that really Factual is all about the data platform layer. We want to be the lowest sub-basement of your application. Very often right now, a lot of our competitors and a lot of people playing, certainly within the local space, invest on the application layer. They are fighting for eyeballs. But they're also distributing their data out, usually through APIs. And so if you want to develop a local application, it's very often that you must use the data of your competitor. At Factual, we think there's enough to do. There's enough excitement and there's enough good business on the data side that we do not want to offer competitive applications. So if you see anything from us, Paul, it'll be a demonstration of what's possible, perhaps. But I don't see Factuals chasing clicks or eyeballs in the near future.
Despite the fact that there's a perception, at least, that moving up the stack towards richer applications, towards more visibility, means more revenue. It's where the money is.
Yeah, I mean, you always want to, you know, in any business, you want to get closer to that stream of cash, right? The closer you are to where the transaction's being made, the more opportunity is for you to better monetize your initiatives. I mean, that's sort of business school 101. However, going up the stack for Factual means that we're competing with our developers, we're competing with a lot of our partners, and that's bad business. So that's something we need to take advantage of. I think more importantly, I would offer that there are a great number of forthcoming and unexplored opportunities that exist purely on the data level for large scale monetization. Those initiatives will be keeping us occupied in the near future. You never want to say never in any business, of course. But generally, I think there is we see a lot of excitement, both technologically and intellectually and financially, around big data. And that's really where we are going to be focusing our efforts in the near term.
And a very large number of very small value transactions is still a lot of money.
Indeed. I think the sort of the data license business is winding down. It might take many, many years for that to wind down. But as companies like Factual, as they aggregate data and basically offer new insights and new ways to analyze the information, people pay for data that make them money, right? Is the sort of simplistic business approach to this. And so we want to ensure that we are always providing not data that you can get it elsewhere, but new and interesting aspects and views on information, which is unattainable elsewhere. And that's always higher CPM, that's always higher transaction. So there's good room for a lot of additional opportunities on the business side. Generally that's not something that necessarily keeps me up at night.
Okay. Now, branding. Different data providers take different routes to projecting a brand image to their potential customers. Some, it's all about the data provider itself. Others tend to play more on the brands and the reputation of the people they're getting data from. In Factual's case, the image that's projected to the world is very much a factual image, isn't it? It's, we have collected this data, we have added value to it. It's us you need to trust.
Indeed. That sounds just ever so slightly sort of fascist, really. basically, like, hey, we're the guys to trust here, and you have no other choice because we're controlling the data flow, and that's the kind of impression that I want to avoid because I don't think it's quite right. We tell our partners, when someone signs on as a data partner, and especially if they're under NDA, we can tell them some of the other partners that we're engaged in, and we say, look, you're part of this data ecosystem. And we've got all of their users giving us edits, and now all of your users giving us edits. An interesting conversation that we have sometimes is companies will say, hey, if I give you all of my edits, then they'll be available to my competitors. And that's true. But of course, the answer is your competitors are already giving us edits. They're in the data that you're consuming right now. So that's part of the offering. Generally, because we're not, at least I would argue, we're not a data mart per se, sort of the we don't host third-party data and then sell it on. We're not a conveyor of information. We're custodians. So really, it is very, very much focused on Factual. Our crosswalk service will point to where Factual entities lie on third-party services. But of course, we don't want to brand those as our own. We don't want to suggest that there's any formal relationship between us and these other companies and these other web services exists where it doesn't. So it's pretty much a factual story to tell, although we are always keen to ensure that to position ourselves as custodians of a data community. And there's a heck of a lot of participants in it right now.
And can I get down through the data to find out where it originated?
Yes. So right now on our data dashboard, you can click into a cell and you will learn where that value can be found elsewhere, either through a data contribution or whether it can be found on the web. So these are basically pointers on a per attribute basis out to data sources. But what's important to note, of course, is that factual looks at we look at it per attribute, and our algorithms are specifically per attribute. But we have summary views, and really that's factual summary view. And we're very keen to promote that summary view as really the canonical reference set. What we want to avoid is when people come and say, "Hey, I want to get a slice of your data, you know, biased in this direction." Because that just leads to far too many products, and we end up with factual entity IDs that are represented differently across different namespaces.
Yeah, indeed. What's the route to sustainability then for the factual proposition?
It's certainly going to be moving outside of places. I think once there's room for things like Crosswalk and Resolve with pretty much any entity-based data domain on the internet. So the world is certainly our plaything, our oyster in that regard. We can take it wide or we can take it deep. Right now we're creating extended attribute sets for specific verticals within the local space. So in December, we launched our restaurants product with another 23 or so attributes. So it's very nice that we can choose to either go wide and look at new verticals, or we can go deep and focus on specific place verticals. And then, of course, we can always facilitate how that data is accessed. And we can analyze the data to produce new insights, which folks in, say, mobile payments and mobile ads can find extremely useful for their business. So there's some very interesting vectors that we can and indeed are taking the company.
So as you get more data, you get more users. And as you get more users, you can actually analyze what they're doing with the data to gain more insights, to create more data, to get more users.
Yeah, I mean, we used to talk of this idea of a virtuous circle of data, which is sort of a cumbersome phrase, so we don't use it much anymore. But really, that is the state of play, is that we want to take over that lowest level data engineering. So you can take the engineers that are currently doing that now and put them on the application layer where it really makes a difference, and that's what makes your product shine. Yes, the more data we have, the more contributors we have, the better product everybody has, which is excellent. This whole idea of data contributions and data partnerships is not merely sort of a token nod in that direction. It's been part of Factual from the beginning.
And presumably, as you open up those different data types and different sets of insights, you're opening up to a new audience that may not be used to dealing with data in the way that you currently provide it.
Yes, I mean this is part of the sort of big data story, isn't it? Is that you've got all this data. We've been gathering it for decades now, and only now do we really have the tools and the approaches and the processing power to garnish insights from that. I think I'd be a fool to say that I know exactly what how our data is going to be used in 2013. I know a lot of the ways that it's used today will still be used in 2013. But even in the last 2 weeks, we've gained some interesting approaches, talking to our customers, hearing about their needs, looking at what kind of data that we have accessible from our partners, that when you combine it, it's even more powerful than the atomic components themselves. Kind of like a BLT sandwich.
Don't like tomatoes. Data markets, then. This podcast is one of a series looking at the data market space. Now, you wouldn't necessarily see Factual as actually sitting squarely in that space. Do you think data markets are a real industry trend, or are we applying a rather odd label to a set of things that don't necessarily fit together?
There are not insignificant investments in data markets, and I think there is certainly room for an organization that allows anyone or a carefully vetted group of individuals or organizations to upload data. I think that the interesting thing, of course, is not just making that data accessible. You know, I think increasingly that can be done through a lot of ways, and you don't necessarily need to go to one place. The internet is becoming a data bazaar, right? You don't necessarily need to go to one place to shop around for data. I think it makes it easier, but I think that ease will slowly become less critical in the next 18 months. I think these companies that are indeed data marts will they will survive best, and they will contribute most to their communities if they actually add something in the process. I think you talk to anyone on your future podcast, they will agree with this. Is anyone who is a pure sort of conveyor for information, where you take it and then you distribute it and you take a cut, you're sort of a data wholesaler. That's interesting. There might be a business there, but I don't think it's particularly exciting. If you can bring it in, if you automatically link it to related data sets, both within and without your collection, you're actually enriching the data because you are who you are and you've got insight into those particular data sets. That's where it gets more interesting. And you know, who knows, Factual could move more aggressively in that direction as well.
It gets more interesting. It also gets more defensible.
Indeed. Just sort of uploading data and selling it on. When I say it's exciting business, I mean, it's also the kind of thing that a lot of people can pick up. Big players can do it. Smaller players can do it. I don't mean to belittle those efforts by any means, because I've seen a lot of good things happen. Personally speaking, I can see that there are, to me, more interesting technological and business challenges ahead. And I know that's what I'm particularly keen to focus on.
Okay, sounds good. So what's the big challenge for Factual this year?
I think what we're going to... The challenge really will be... last year was all about getting our 50 countries in play, about refining our focus and our model. This year will be about growing our developer and data partner ecosystem. It will be about taking the data we have now and creating new platform level products that allow our developers to view and use that information in ways that they don't have access to elsewhere. So if I were to summarize it, I'd say it's growth. With growth comes revenue. But also expansion of how we can better leverage the assets we have, rather than just redistributing them back out. How can we ensure that we make the best possible use of the data that we have?
Okay, so Factual has grown and needs to start getting stickier.
Yeah, I mean, we've had tremendous success. I'm absolutely delighted with the large and small engagements that we've had over 2011 and even just in a few weeks in 2012. People subscribe enthusiastically to our products and to our business model. But again, you know, growth is going to be absolutely critical, like it is in any business. And we want to ensure that people who require local data, especially with the advent of mobile payments and sort of the new ways that local data are being used, we want to ensure that they first think of Factual, and when they come to Factual, they find a product that is affordable and meets their needs.
Sounds good. Well, I'm conscious of the time, so I think we'll need to wrap it up there. But thank you very much for your time, Tyler, and I look forward to seeing how Factual moves forward this year and beyond. Thank you.
Indeed. Thank you, Paul.